were talking earlier in the program about presidential candidates in 2016 and who might run. And the one person who called in asked me, who did I think Hillary Clinton's running mate would be? And I, very honest, I haven't given it much thought. I've talked a lot about Hillary Clinton being the Democratic candidate for president in 2016, but vice president, I didn't think about it. We've had a few people, more than two, as a matter of fact, several people, email, text, and actually call us off the air and suggest Bill Clinton as being the running mate for Hillary Clinton in 2016. And they have both suggested that and asked whether that would be constitutional. And I can give you this answer as well. I'm not sure. I've checked a couple of different websites, the factcheck.org and Wiki Answers and a couple of different other websites. And the answer is probably not, but it is an untested constitutional conundrum. And I'll give a quick answer here before bringing in Dave Kolpak of the Associated Press. Maybe he has the answer. But the original Constitution had no requirements for the office of vice president. However, the 12th Amendment, ratified in 1804, said that no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to that of vice president of the United States. Okay, so that would be the basic requirements of president would be you'd be 35 years old, born in the United States, resident of the country for the preceding 14 years, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, Bill Clinton would fit all of those to be able to be vice president. However, of course, the 22nd Amendment, which gave a president basically term limit, you can only be elected twice to president, that might disqualify Bill Clinton from being vice president because he's already been elected president twice, and that might prevent him from being president again. The long answer is what I just gave you. The short answer is I'm not sure there is an answer to it. It is a constitutional conundrum, the best that I can tell. Dave Kolpak is a longtime respected journalist in the state of North Dakota. Don't laugh. It's true. You're a longtime respected. Your Hall of Fame plaque at Fargo South High School says it. You're a longtime respected journalist. He is with the Associated Press here in Fargo. And we shouldn't laugh because Dave has spent the last several weeks covering a very serious and sad trial. It is the trial of Tino Bagola, who was convicted yesterday of murdering two children, ages 9 and 6, Destiny Shaw and Travis Dubois, in St. Michael, North Dakota, in 2011. I wanted Dave on to kind of recap the trial and talk more about that. David, welcome to the Mike McFeely Show. This might be your, is this your first appearance or not?
Oh, boy. It could be. How long have you been there now?
Like 100 years.
Well, that qualifies you for the Fargo South Hall of Fame, by the way.
If I would have went to Fargo South, I would be eligible for that. Congratulations, by the way. You have been selected for the Fargo South Hall of Fame.
Thank you. It's quite an honor. It was kind of interesting. They inducted 5 people this year, and it kind of varies from year to year. And in fact, a couple of years, they couldn't find any. I'm not sure what happened there. But, there were 5 people that went in this year, and one of them was a physical therapist who is building a huge clinic for children with special needs. Another one was a highly commended Air Force veteran who fought in Iraq and now is a senior intelligence officer for the Guard. There was also the coach, Dale Hurdle, who won 8 state championships for South. And
then there was you. Is that what you're saying?
Wait, there was one more. It gets better. A researcher for a pharmaceutical firm out east, and she's been on a team that discovered an anti-cancer treatment for melanoma.
Oh.
And is already saving lives. So, yeah, that's my family and friends were asking me, and what did you do again to get on there?
You're a respected journalist.
Yes.
That's what you are.
Someone wrote that, I guess.
I guess they did. seriously, congratulations. You and I have been friends for a long time, for 20-plus years, and it is kind of cool. I know you make light of it, but it is something that they can't take away from you. And you will be in the Hall of Fame at Fargo South for as long as Fargo South stands, which I presume to be a long time. So congratulations.
Yes, thank you. It's an honor.
The trial, it ended yesterday. Tino Bagola found guilty of the two murders of Travis Dubois Jr. and Destiny Shaw in St. Michael, North Dakota, a couple of years ago. A horrible situation, terrible tragedy. And I'm asking this more as a human than a journalist or a talk show host, but covering a trial like that from the human side of it, it has to be somewhat difficult, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Gut-wrenching and depressing and all those things. I probably the worst day for me, and this is going to sound odd, is when their teachers testified and people in the school that just talked about the bright futures that these kids had. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, they were both good students and intelligent kids and more so very popular. Especially Destiny, she was at the head of her class and, really a lot of people looked up to her and just really had when you talk about how difficult it is to come from those surroundings and, kind of break the cycle, it sure seemed like if anyone was going to do it, it would probably be her.
And just if people don't know, St. Michael, North Dakota is located on the Spirit Lake Reservation up. That's in the Devil's Lake area. And there's been many stories in the media recently about Spirit Lake. They have some troubles there, as many reservations do, but it is a very difficult area for children in which to grow up. There has been, some talk of sexual abuse of children and some of the leaders in the tribe not really doing much to help the children who are being sexually abused. And that's been a controversy in the media recently. But Tino Bagola was convicted of just some terrible stabbing deaths of these two children. What were the circumstances behind the murders, Dave? And this, I think, plays into, again, to just tough situation these kids were in.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tino Bagola came up from Sisseton to live with the father of the two children, and he too had substance abuse problems and a checkered past, and I think the hope of some of the relatives was to get him out of South Dakota and maybe get him up there and maybe some new surroundings might help get him squared away. And instead he kind of fought with the father of the kids the whole time he was there. And according to what was said at trial and his confession, and there were two confessions, by the way, which made it kind of tricky for prosecutors, motive was he was unhappy with the children's father and went over to pick a fight with him and instead took it out on the children.
And part of the double confession, that is a major part of the trials, that the father of the two children confessed to the murders and says that he did them. Tino Bagola also confessed to the murders. How did the prosecution sort that out? And what was the reasoning that was finally figured out as to why the father tried to confess to the murders?
Yeah, that's a great question. And even more interesting is the fact that Bagola was arrested a year after the bodies were discovered, which kind of really calls into account the persistence and patience of the investigators. I watched both confessions. I saw the father's confession first. And, what was interesting is both sides, to bolster their case, and that's what it was. The defense said the father confessed, and that's believable, and prosecutors said no. Tino's confession, and there was more to back that up, I'll get to in a second, but after watching the father's confession, I kind of thought, yeah, well, I can see why he was considered a suspect. It was a long interrogation. It was 7 hours, and there were times he said, I probably could do something like this. And then at the end, it's kind of, okay, yeah, I did it. No one else did it. And but there were also times when, he really showed, his concern for the family and how much those kids meant to him through the confession. And the difference ultimately, though, wound up to be some DNA evidence that was discovered later, along with a palm print of Tino Bagola that was found in the bedroom. But you know, the fact he had two confessions, it was interesting because each side was talking about how the investigators had coerced the confession out of each one of them, which is an interesting dichotomy there.
So did we ever sort out why the father did confess?
No, not really. He was, you know, in the middle of a long drinking binge, and you know, his recollection of everything for a 3-4 day period there was pretty blurry. So, you know, I don't know if it was just the 6-7 hours of interrogation, or, you know, whether he was, you know, just so out of it at that time, he really didn't know and thought, you know, maybe it was something he could have done.
What were the, did you get a chance to talk to the families of the two victims, and mm-hmm. what response did they have to the conviction yesterday?
Well, and that's yet another interesting point, Mike. There really weren't family members there through this whole trial. You know, interesting and sad. And I think part of it is, you know, this happened up in Spirit Lake, and the trial was held here in Fargo. And I know it's a hardship, probably for a lot of them to drive, but I have not talked to any family members. They, you know, most of them did not make it down to watch the proceeding.
Okay. Mr. Bagola, what's the next step for him? When's the sentencing? Yeah. When's that going to happen?
Well, the sentencing is in December. I'm sure he'll file an appeal. So we'll see what happens from there. I expect an appeal to be filed within the next couple of weeks. But he's facing life in prison, and that's fully what I expect.
And I don't mean this as a shot at you, Dave. You were at the trial every single day covering this thing, and you and I had a chance to talk a little bit, you know, here and there, seeing each other out around town. But did this get the type of play in the media, whether it's locally, whether it's nationally, that a double murder of two children would get? In your opinion, as a long time, in all seriousness, a long time respected journalist, did it go under the radar a little bit?
That's not a shot at me at all, Mike. And as a matter of fact, I need to correct you as part of that. I did not cover it every day.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. And it'll answer your question. I started covering it early on for several days, and it was not getting the play, Mike. There were not a lot of newspapers picking this up. There weren't a lot of people calling, you know, to make sure I filed something extended every day. You know, I know the Devil's Lake radio station followed it on a daily basis, and I know one of those days I didn't go, and we didn't pick up anything at all. They had called and you know, asked for that a little bit, but other than that, we heard from few people, which, you know, I'm not judging that. I guess people can make their own commentary on.
Sure. Right? I understand. All right, David, thank you. Thanks for coming on. Let's not have it be so long before we chat on Aragon.
Okay, Michael, job, okay? Let's get you in the Alexandria Hall of Fame.
Good luck with that, my friend.
All
good
right.
luck.
I'll work on it.
Dave Kolbeck of the Associated Press.